number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Hey, glad you could be with us here on Yahoo Sports Radio, taking you through the night tonight. I am not afraid to admit when I really don't know something. I really ain't. I got to be honest with you. I've gone through this before where I may not understand certain things, and I just literally will ask questions after question after question, because that's how I figured out, hey, it's a quicker way to learn rather than try to fake my way through it. When it comes to soccer, I'm not the biggest fan. When it comes to how the World Cup is organized, it's not something that I just gravitate towards, all right? I hate to admit that, because I know we're kind of emerging as a country into a better soccer country than we used to. But this is stuff I just don't pay attention to. So when I see something that I saw today that sort of outraged me and had me going, what? I have to learn as much as I can. Today, the United States beat Guatemala 4-0 in Columbus, Ohio, as part of a tournament, a qualifying tournament for the World Cup. And the reason that I watched it today was because before the match, the news about this match was that the United States World Cup appearance is on the line in 2016 for an event that happens in 2 years. I was flabbergasted. How does this work? We're 2 years away from the World Cup. And in 2016, the United States' back is against the wall? They had to win this game against Guatemala. I mean, if they didn't, the road would be nearly impossible. Not impossible, nearly impossible. They weren't going to be shut out. But all of the experts kept saying, well, it's literally a do-or-die game. It's as close as you can get without it officially being a do-or-die game, but it was close enough. And I kept thinking to myself, how could this be? How in the world could this be? 2 years away from a tournament. Now, I understand that this is how it works. These are the qualifying rules, and this is what happens. Okay. I know the United States, that this collection of talent that the United States has not been performing well. And Jurgen Klinsmann, his job is on the line. I get it. Again, I'm not a soccer expert, but I read the tea leaves pretty well. And by the way, if anybody wants to fill me in on exactly why this is normal or exactly why this is okay and this is accepted, please feel free to educate me. Because like I said at the start of this segment, I am open to admitting when I don't know much about something. And soccer and our standing in the world and how the World Cups works and FIFA and all that stuff is just something I just don't gravitate towards. My kids, maybe. Your kids, maybe. But not me. But I was blown away by this. That we may miss the World Cup. We could have missed the World Cup because of this game tonight in Columbus, Ohio. And yet it wasn't. I casually stumbled upon it. So it told me two things. One, we're not really into this yet. We always pretend that we do. And we kind of pretend that we're right there. We're on the cusp. But not really. I stumbled upon this. This should have been major news. If we were really the soccer nation, as some would like to believe, this would have been major news. Now, remember, it's only major news if you're into it. And that's a big difference. Just because you and your buddies all knew this game was important and knew it for a while and had been following it, it doesn't mean the rest of the country was. Every 4 years that the United States is in the World Cup, I am really, really proud of what we do as a country. Sports by its nature are tribal. We know that. I'm from Chicago, you're from Missouri, you're from Texas, you're from whoever. We always, we're tribal. We root for the teams that we root for, and that's our group. And that our group is better than your group, and that's what we do. When we rarely, and I mean rarely, have things that galvanize us as a country, not a city, but a country. And the World Cup is it. We're not gathering as a nation to watch the Olympics. We're not gathering together in shopping malls and stadiums and all of that to watch the United States basketball team. We're not doing it. But we do for this because it was cool. It's in the summer. Not a lot of other things are going on. It's an exciting sport when stuff is on the line, and it makes you feel good. It's the only time we really get to root for the United States as the United States. It's pretty awesome. I remember 6 years ago when Landon Donovan scored that goal in South Africa. It was like an extra time, and it kept us alive, and it was brilliant. I mean, you go to YouTube and you watch just a montage of people around the nation, on military bases around the world, all in unison, all cheering, all losing their minds over one moment. It's great. It's a great feeling. And we were almost denied that because of this game tonight in Columbus, Ohio. That in 2 years, the world will be gathering to celebrate the World Cup and the United States would be home. Now, stop and think for a second. Everyone who says that soccer is growing and growing and you can't contain it, and MLS is doing so well, and our interest in the sport is peaking, and the ratings are really good for the World Cup matches, all of that. Imagine what kind of damage the sport suffers if the United States had missed out on the World Cup in 2018. I wouldn't say it would kill it, but it would crush it. I mean, we're not there yet. It's not something that we're all into yet. But this one event, we are kind of into. The ratings are really good for it. Really good for it. I was surprised because I'm a skeptic. I really was. But I've seen the data over two World Cups. When the United States plays, it's a must-see event. It really is. But that's it, really. That's it. This should have been on the front page of every news. This should have been major deal if we are the nation people think we are when it comes to this sport. Nevertheless, the United States won tonight 4-0. I don't know what this means going forward. I don't know if our backs are going to be against the wall in another event. I don't know if this secures a spot in the World Cup. And again, feel free to educate me. I have no problems with that because I'm not going to come on this radio station and admit that I know everything about World Cup soccer. But I am going to tell you my observation is this would have damaged this sport if we weren't in 2 years from now in Russia. Would have killed us. Because I enjoyed it. I really do. I really do enjoy it. Every 4 years, and even so much with the women, because my daughter is a soccer player and she really likes Alex Morgan and those ladies. So every 2 years, I get to do this with my family. But I'll tell you right now, the men, I really want to be alive if the United States ever wins this thing. I don't know if they ever will. I think it's a very daunting task. But I would love to be alive to see that happen. I'm crazy with this stuff. I remember one time I was doing a show with a soccer guy. He knew soccer inside and out. I mean, he just knew everything about it. Then I remember going on the air with him and I said, "All right, you know about this. Why do we stink at this?" And he goes, "Well, what do you mean? We're getting so much better." I go, "Oh, come on. We're the United States. We're the richest country in the world. We have 300 million people on the planet. We can't find 20 people that are good at this. I mean, really good at this, like world class good at this. We can't find 20 people. Really? We've got small countries with a population the size of Delaware that are killing us in these tournaments. And we can't find 20 exceptional soccer athletes to go out there and win this thing. Why don't we throw $1 trillion at this? Start grabbing kids from the cradle. Oh, you'd look like you'd be a good soccer player in 18 years. Hey, mom and dad, we'll raise your child at some camp down in Florida. I don't know what the answer is, but why is it that we're not good at this? And he looked at me as if I was insane. Because I didn't know. Because I didn't know the process. And apparently, there is a process. Coming up, we'll talk Final Four and an arena problem? Yes, next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. And again, those of you who know a little bit more about how the soccer world works, please explain to me how 2 years away from the World Cup, where backs were against the wall. I know. I'm sure it's just something. It's a global thing, and I get it. But God, I was blown away, and I think I've got a pretty good handle on a lot of things, but I just was blown away with that. We must really stink. This team must be really awful. What happened to the team that captivated our hearts back in South Africa 6 years ago? What, Landon Donovan was that important? I just don't get it. All right, 800-777-2907. Oh, I knew this story was going to pop up sooner or later. I feel like this is a yearly thing, but I guess with NRG Stadium, it is a really big deal. The Final Four is going to be in Houston at NRG Stadium, and apparently it is an atrocious arena to shoot the basketball in. In fact, I saw a number of stories on this, and they showed pictures of the arena. It really looks awful. Look, the Carrier Dome is in a football stadium. A lot of these Final Fours and really bigger, like, regional games, maybe the Elite Eights, are in big stadiums. We've played basketball in a number of large football stadium-like arenas. But I got to be honest with you, I've never really seen it laid out like they have it in our NRG Stadium. The depth perception looks like this could be a problem for teams that shoot from the outside, or at least most of their offense is shooting from the outside. And sure enough, they've run the numbers, and indeed, if you are a shooting basketball team, you're going to have problems at NRG Stadium, at least historically. Teams that have played there in the past just don't have good shooting numbers. The last Final Four that was there, Butler played UConn in 2011. Butler shot 18%. If you shoot from the three, the combined statistics at NRG Stadium are pretty bad. I guess Duke was 8 of 19 in their game against Gonzaga in the regional final last year. Sweet 16 at that arena, Duke, Utah, UCLA, and Gonzaga, 22% from behind the arc. So it doesn't seem to be just a one-team problem. It seems like this is a stadium or an arena where basketball shooting is an issue for whatever reason. So naturally now, that's being thrown out there as, okay, now that we've got four teams, which is the one team that doesn't rely on the outside shot? Because obviously, statistically and historically, teams that play at NRG Stadium in Houston don't shoot particularly well. And sure enough, that team is North Carolina. North Carolina, 61% of their scoring is in the paint, or inside the arc, I should say. Whereas everyone else, a little bit more heavy on the three-point line. Villanova, 33% behind the arc of their offense. Syracuse, 37. Oklahoma, nearly 39. Whereas Coach Roy Williams says, we don't take 35 threes. All right. So is that how we're going to handicap this? All right. I think North Carolina is the best team in the field anyway. But if I throw this in there, now I'm wondering, is this just going to be a Tar Heel roll? Because what was the only reason Syracuse has a chance in this game? They can shoot. And the perimeter defense for North Carolina is not that good. Well, the perimeter defense for North Carolina is now going to get aided by the inability or the lack of some sort of depth perception in NRG Stadium. I mean, take a look at the pictures. It's really wild. Like it is a basketball court, and then if you're kind of used to having fans like kind of on top of the action on the ends that's not how it's built. Because a lot of football stadiums will sort of move the, they'll move the court in a particular place, but they'll build the bleachers so that they'll kind of come out and they'll still give a semblance of a basketball arena. It's just more cavernous. That's not how this is built. This is actually built where there's tremendous space between the end lines where the basket is and where the crowd is. There's tremendous space. So there really is just this court and then almost a good buffer before the crowd is really kind of there. Now, I don't play basketball. I'm actually pretty awful at basketball, but I do understand how depth perception works, and I can sense that this would be a problem. So again, North Carolina, not just because they have depth, not just because they have Bryce Johnson, not just because they're well coached, not just because of a number of things as to why North Carolina is one of the top teams in the country. Now you throw this, the fact that they don't rely on the outside shot. They rely mostly on shots inside the arc. And if you rely on the outside shot like the other teams tend to do, that's going to be a problem at this arena. Crazy. Frankly, I hate the fact that these games are played there. Really, I do. And call me stodgy and old, and I get it, because that sounds like an old person thing. Like, I was better when it was back in the... I know, I understand. It just feels weird when they're in these football stadiums. It just does. I remember there was a game at 2009. It was at Ford Field in Detroit. Like, Ford Field? Really? I mean, a couple of years ago, it was in Dallas. It was in Jerry Jones's crib. What, these they're basketball games. How many people have to be in an arena to watch a basketball game? You have to have 70,000 people all with lousy seats. You can't see anything. I mean, you pay a couple of $100 for a Final Four game to sit where? So you can watch it on television? But we've been going to these arenas for quite some time. It's not a new phenomenon. You know, my brother went to the 93 Final Four in the Superdome in Louisiana when Kentucky went there. He said he couldn't see a thing. But he was just there with some college buddies. We've played them at all sorts of football arenas. In fact, if my memory serves me right, the last time that a basketball game, the national championship game, was not played in a big arena like this, I think it was in 96 when it was played at the Meadowlands, at a Continental Arena or wherever it was called, wherever the Nets used to play. And that's when Syracuse played Kentucky. After that, we've been playing in football stadiums ever since. I guess it's kind of one of the perks about having an indoor football stadium is that maybe, just maybe, you get to host a Final Four. I mean, they're going to be in Arizona next year, and I'm assuming they're going to be playing at the Glendale Spaceship Stadium that the Cardinals play in. Because they're not giving up that cash cow. 70,000, 80, 75, 65,000 tickets to the Final Four? Just put them in a football stadium? So, again, depth perception is the key. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Dan Feldman's going to join us from NBCSports.com. We're going to talk some NBA because we're only a couple of weeks away from the end of the regular season. And storylines outside the Warriors. I'm still obsessed with LeBron James and the Cavaliers and everything around that. And I do want to get a sense as to where the Eastern Conference really is. No one's paying attention, but the Atlanta Hawks are playing pretty well. Are the Celtics a threat? What about Toronto? We've sort of conceded that the Cavaliers will get their act together and play pretty good basketball. They didn't have LeBron James tonight and blew a lead to the Houston Rockets. But in a seven-game series, they are probably the best team in the East. Maybe. Dan Feldman next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, we only have a couple of more weeks of the regular season to the NBA, and then we're into the playoffs. And I know this whole year has been about Golden State, but there's a lot of other things going on in the NBA, so that's why we bring in Dan Feldman from NBCSports.com to help us go over the association. How are you, Dan?
Good. How are you?
Good. I have to admit something. I have this morbid fascination with LeBron James's drama. I don't know why I'm so into it, but I read everything I can. I'm fascinated with the idea that he's toying with not only the team and the fan base. Am I crazy, or is there something here that people should be paying attention to?
I do think it matters. I do think it's worth paying attention to. You might feel a little guilty about enjoying the drama, but you are far from the only one. Fans
okay.
love this. And you know who else loves this? LeBron. Everybody's
right.
talking about LeBron. LeBron, LeBron, LeBron. It gets a little bit of attention off the words. Like you said, they're the story of the year. Steph Curry has become the best player in the league. I mean, he's leading the league in all-star votes. He's popular. He's great. He was the MVP last year. He's even better. The Warriors are the defending champions. They're even better. So this gets the attention back on LeBron. One, I think he likes that. And two, I think he's trying to get some of his power back because he signed with the Cavs, and this is not as easy as I think he thought it would be. You know, the Warriors are a roadblock that I don't think he saw coming. I don't think really any of us saw coming that this team would be so dominant and LeBron would have such a tough time, and I'm sure that's frustrating for him, and I don't know if he knows where to go from here. So in the meantime, make sure the Cavs know that LeBron's in charge, and that if you don't do what he wants, maybe he'll leave. Maybe he won't, but do you want to find out?
I think that's why I'm fascinated with it, because I'm wondering, is there really a possibility that after two or three seasons that he bolts again from this team? And my front part of my brain says, oh no, he'll never do that. But then there's always this part of me that goes, you know, he might. Is there any feeling that this could happen, even if it's very small?
Yes. If the question is there a small feeling? Yes, absolutely. And there's a lot of reasons to think that it's possible. One, you know, when you're at the fame level of LeBron and you have achieved so much, I think it plays in two ways. So in one way, the people around him, you know, the advice he gets, you know, when you're that level of rich and that level of famous, you don't necessarily think about things like you and I, and, you know, maybe he doesn't realize how great the backlash would be if he left Cleveland again. And then, too, because he's accomplished so much, I mean, pretty much in his life, in the grand scheme, LeBron has accomplished everything he's wanted to do. So maybe there's a part of him that believes, you know what, I could lead, I could make it work, I could convince people to stay with me. There's some ways to see it happening if he's frustrated with the direction of the team and where they're going. I don't think he's going to leave. I want to make that clear. I don't think he will. But it's very easy to construct possibilities where he would.
All right, so they're still the favorites in the Eastern Conference, but I'm looking at that conference to see if there's any sort of threat at all. Should I look at it, the Atlanta Hawks? They seem to be playing very, very well, and they're doing the Atlanta Hawk thing, in which they've got a bunch of guys that score about 20 points a game. Are the Hawks a threat, or is it still just sort of a mirage?
I think they're a decent threat. I don't know. I think the Raptors are probably the most threatening team. But really, in the East right now, I don't know, teams 2 through 9, I feel like in the right series, could threaten Cleveland. I mean, it's a lot of parity. Even 1 through 9. So the conference is better, at least in the playoff teams, than it was last year. I mean, even you look at the bottom of that rung with the Pistons and the Pacers and the Bulls. I mean, those teams I don't think are pushovers. And you bring up the Hawks, they're playing the best they have in about a year. They started great last season. They sort of fell off a little bit, and that extends into the playoffs, and they just couldn't put up any real fight once, you know, they got deep in the playoffs. This team is defending better. They have a better understanding of what they want to do defensively, and it's working for them, and their offense is well coached. I don't know if they have the most talent on offense, but they have enough, and they have a good system that works for them. They seem to be buying in. They're peaking at the right time. Yeah, I think they're a dangerous team.
What happened to the Chicago Bulls? Why can't they at least make a playoff push? The Eastern Conference isn't the dredge that it used to be in the bottom. You have to still have a winning record to get in, but the Bulls should at least be in this thing, shouldn't they?
Maybe. I mean, they have a lot of problems. Number one, Jimmy Butler is not himself. He looks like he's playing hurt. There was a report that he's going to need surgery off after this season. He kind of poo-pooed that, but he doesn't look right when you watch him play. Joakim Noah's been out for the year. They missed him. Maybe they weren't going to get what they had hoped from him. Maybe he's just aging. But they, you know, they lose whatever productive player he's been for them over the last several years. And I think they missed Tom Thibodeau. Maybe they regret keeping him if they had kept him. I know he warned a lot of people there, but their mindset seems to be that they miss him, and that can be self-perpetuating. If you're second-guessing Fred Hoiberg because you're wondering, well, what would Thibodeau do? Would that be better? That affects how you play on the court.
Dan Feldman joins us, NBCSports.com, as we go over the NBA. Westbrook, 16 triple-doubles already this year. You know, tonight they gave Kevin Durant the night off, so they lose to Detroit. But still, where do you put that? Is that an eye-popping stat in this NBA era?
It sort of is. I mean, I think you get players who hunt triple-doubles, and maybe Westbrook does on occasion. But he, you know, he's earned them. I was thinking about earlier today, what would an MVP ballot look like after Stephen Curry? It's a five-player ballot. And Westbrook might be number two. I mean, he could be five. I think it's close with Durant and LeBron and Kawhi Leonard. But Westbrook's having a great season. He's an all-around player. I think he's curtailed some of his scoring a little bit to focus on those other things, to focus on passing, to focus on hitting the glass so he can get the team out in transition. And it's working very well for him in the Thunder.
I see a lot of times, and I know Popovich does this, and I saw tonight LeBron took a rest. I saw that Durant took a rest. Popovich rests guys all the time. Golden State is actively pursuing this 73 win thing. Should they give some guys time off before the playoffs?
No. I mean, this drives this team. They have a swagger about them. They believe they're going to get at least 73 wins. You know, that plays into their confidence. That plays into their attitude. I think that's more valuable than the rest they could get. And, you know, the way they blow out enough teams, their top players aren't playing huge minutes. A lot of times they're resting in the fourth quarter. I'm sure they would, in some ways, like to get those players rest, but I think keeping their confidence up and keeping this push alive to set this record and have this really historical great achievement, you know, on their resume, I think that outweighs the need for rest.
All right, I got to ask this because there's going to be a sacrificial team that goes up against the Warriors in round one. It's either Houston or Dallas, possibly Utah. Is there a front runner? Is any of those teams playing good enough to secure a spot?
Well, I think the Mavericks are going to be the odd team out in that race. They've been slumping a little bit lately. Chandler Parsons is hurt, and you know he's out for the rest of the year. So, I think they're going to be the odd team out in that race for those bottom couple spots.
Dan Feldman, NBCSports.com, as we head down to the NBA playoffs in just a couple of weeks. Great time. Great talking with you, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
All right, and again, Dan Feldman from NBC Sports. Look, this is a year where it has been about Golden State, and I kind of get that. And we go into the playoffs, and it's really still going to be Warriors and possibly Warriors-Spurs. Can we get that? But this has been a really interesting year in the NBA, and a lot of it is more drama than anything on the court. We've had some good teams and teams that have played well. But there is a sun that is shining in Oakland that just dwarfs really any sort of accomplishment. Russell Westbrook, 16 triple-doubles. It's just kind of, it doesn't even show up because Steph Curry is just running away with the MVP thought. The San Antonio Spurs are having one of the best seasons in franchise history. But again, dwarfed when you compare it to what's going on with Golden State. Now, the one thing that does pop up, and it's the one thing that I just can't get enough of. I'm sorry. I just can't. Is the LeBron drama. And it only comes to me. The only drama that I like is something that ends up being monumental. And him leaving Cleveland would be monumental. If he doesn't leave, if he never leaves, not following the Cavs on Twitter and all that stuff is irrelevant. But if this all adds up to something where in a couple of years, we're talking about LeBron's legacy against what the people of Cleveland are seeing, I think that's a big story. I think it's a big deal. That's why I'm paying attention to it, because I don't want to be caught off guard when he announces one day, hey, by the way, see, I'm going to L.A. I just want to be know ahead of time.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, glad you'd be with us here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue through the night tonight. All right, Adam, have you heard about Jim Nance's toast? How he likes his toast?
Yes, I saw that he, carries a picture or something.
I love this story. I love this story. Jim Nance loves his toast burnt. Wants it burnt, like really, really burnt. And apparently when he goes out for breakfast, no restaurant gets it right. And why would they? Because when somebody says they want it burnt, you're kind of assuming as a cook, they don't really want it burnt. They just want it dark. They just want it like above normal. Like, all right, the normal way is like the setting's on 5. They probably wanted the setting to be like on 7. But apparently Jim Nance wants it on 10. And so he always gets toast and he has to send it back. Well, you just don't stick toast back in the toaster and cook it up again. You have to put toast back in. You basically have to do fresh bread. So he always says that it takes him a lot longer to get his breakfast because the toast needs to come out burnt. So his wife came up with this idea because she was just getting sick and tired of this. Every time they'd go out to dinner, Nance can't eat toast unless it's burnt, and nobody ever gets it burnt, and it just drives him crazy, and they have to sit around and wait for the burnt toast to come back, and the cooks are probably too scared to give him like really burnt toast, so they never get it right. So she took a picture of the properly burnt toast that he wants, he laminated it, he put it in his wallet, and he gives it to the server every time he orders so that the cook gets the toast right. Actually, as insane as this story sounds, that's not a bad idea. If you like food cooked a certain way and nobody gets it right, this might actually be a pretty good idea. But I know if I was a cook, it would drive me crazy if all of a sudden people started giving me like laminated pictures of how they wanted their food. I'd be like, oh God, all right, I'll have to... Can you make it like the lady on Chopped? No, I can't make it like the lady on Chopped. I only like my bananas cut like this. Ugh. That would probably drive me crazy. So on the one hand, I totally dig this story. But on the other hand, it's kind of just, it's a little weird. Who likes burnt toast, by the way? Really? Burnt toast?
Not me at all.
I don't know one person outside of Jim Nance now that likes burnt toast. Is that not awful? As a matter of fact, if I make toast, and sometimes I'll make, like, one of my favorite things to do when my wife has to work late is I make breakfast for dinner. I love doing that. I love it. I will say, all right, we're going to have breakfast for dinner, and I'll break out hash browns, and I'll make scrambled eggs.
I did that the other night.
I love doing it because I never get to do it during the week. And the weekends, my wife's always like, we'll either go out for breakfast or everybody sleeps in and we skip breakfast. So I love making breakfast. So every now and then I'll do this, breakfast for dinner type of thing. And I really go out. I'll make bacon. I'll have sausage and I'll make hash browns and then I'll cook some toast. And a lot of times I'm so busy with the other things. I kind of forget the toast is in and it's not set correctly. And I'll burn some toast and I get really angry when I burn toast because I'm like, ah, I can't stand it. I can't stand the smell. I can't stand looking at it. It drives me crazy. I have to throw it away and start all over. No, Jim Nance would come to my house and eat it. He would love it. I mean, it comes out of the... I mean, just... Who... It's burnt food. It's not like, oh, it's extra dark, so it's extra crunchy. It's charred. It's burnt to a crisp. There's no flavor to it. It tastes like... I don't know, a burnt item. That's the best way I could describe it. Who likes their food like that? Apparently, Jim Nance. I don't know. Is burnt toast somehow better for you or something?
I don't think so.
Maybe when he was a kid, it was like all he got served.
Right.
It was like his mother just didn't know how to cook toast. And she finally said, you're going to eat this. And he said, oh, I'm not going to eat burnt toast. You will eat every last bit of that burnt toast. And you will like it. And he said, okay, I'll like it. Or maybe it's just weird. I mean, maybe it's just that's the way. I started thinking when I read that story because my first thought was, do I have something that when I go to the restaurant, is there something I'm really picky on that I would now want to go on the internet and find and or take a picture with my phone and print it out to make sure I got it right? And I can't think of anything.
Is there anything like special you ask for, period? Anything?
Okay, I don't like onions.
Yeah, the same.
Or I don't like any onions. I don't like cooked onions. I don't like raw onions. Yeah. I don't like Spanish onions same or purple onions or any onions. So if a salad comes with onions, like if they just sprinkle some onions in there, I won't eat the salad. I don't want it even on the side of the plate. Like if I get a burger and they go, oh, we just throw the garden on the side. I'm like, save the onions. I don't even want it on my plate.
Although I do like onion rings.
See, I don't even like onion rings, but I like the onion wrap, or not the onion wrap. What do you, the dough, the God, give me the word, breading.
Oh, okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I'll eat the breading around an onion ring, but I won't eat the onion in the onion ring.
Yeah.
So it drives my wife crazy because she likes onion rings, and I'll grab one and I'll just nibble around the thing and I'll just leave it, and she's like, that is disgusting, and she actually told the kids, I never want to see you do to an onion ring what your father does to that onion ring. It's like that with egg rolls. I do that with egg rolls. I like the egg roll wrap, the wonton wrap of an egg roll, right. But I won't eat the crap in the middle of the egg roll. It just becomes a pile on my plate. It's just pretty gross. But I won't order it that way. Like, I'm not going to.
Yeah, I would say for me, just like, you know, if I'm ordering a burger, you know, I like just lettuce and, you know, ketchup, or if they come with a sauce. But I don't want tomatoes or onions.
Yeah, I don't have tomatoes or onions on anything. I don't. And
or pickles. I hate pickles.
Oh, you don't like pickles?
No.
Okay, I'll eat pickles.
Never liked pickles.
I get like, and I hate to admit this because I know I get like a child sometimes in a restaurant when I get something that has onions in it because I won't eat it. And I get really upset, like, I asked for no onions.
I'm the same way.
And my wife will go, just eat it. And I'll go, no. And I'll be, I ordered no onions. This came with onions. I don't want it. And I'm just like a baby.
My
wife
always takes it and just like takes it all off and then gives it back to me. Like,
yeah, exactly.
But I still know. Like, I still act like I taste it.
Exactly. Like the phantom onion is still in the presence of the meal when it's disappeared. The phantom onion still makes it unedible to me. All right, Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.